Hi, I'm Simon Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight of the Starlight Campbell Band.
Welcome to the final,
for the moment,
Supertone Show.
The Jimi Hendrix Experience and Hey Joe. And that was released in the United States on the 1st of May in 1967 on Polydor Records. It was also released in the UK in December 66, where it became a hit, peaking at number 6 in the singles charts. And the American single, which had the song 51st Anniversary as the B-side, failed to chart.
Written by Billy Roberts. Recorded at Dillene Lea Studios, produced by Charles Chandler, who was originally Charles, the bass player from the
You're playing now. Go on.
Animals.
Yes.
Well, so we should play, because this is the final show of 1967 and also the final Supertones show of this series. We may come back, we may not. The reason why we're actually stopping the show is we've become really busy with our music. We need to record a new album, and it takes us quite a lot of time. I mean, you do the research every week, don't you? It takes
you
know, 7-8 hours a week,
and then we've got to record a show,
record it and all that, and the expense associated with keeping it up and stuff. So we decided, sadly, that we were going to stop it and concentrate on our music for the time being. It doesn't mean that we're not going to come back, of course.
No, because I was thinking about this. You know, there are other DJs who are musicians, like on Six Music. What's his face now?
Oh, you mean old...
Yeah. I'm a bit tired, actually.
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah,
anyway, but they
Jarvis
take,
Cocker.
That's right.
Is he looking
I'm
for
mentioning
you?
That to you because it's like, you know, he said, well, let's take a break. And it could be a year, it could be 2 years. We don't know. But the main thing is to keep it fresh. And I think that partly the show has been like our weekly date and we've learned so much.
We have.
And now I want to, we've got so much ahead of us with the new recording studio and the new Cadillac console and the new albums, and we're doing an acoustic album and we're touring and we're in Germany and there's all everything. It's just like we need to really focus on that and swim.
Well, that's right. Yeah,
musical adventure.
It's not just you know, we've got this new The Language of Curiosity, which is the new Static Campbell band album, the full band.
Yes.
You say we've got the acoustic album, but also we've got a prog rock album to write. We're thinking of doing like an EP, you know, with something special but we're not going to tell you about.
Maybe you're some German Schlager, you never know.
Well, you never know. But tonight is the first
yes.
and last, for the time being, a recording that we're doing through a brand new Cadillac console, which we have named
Betty, after my Nana, who's on the front cover of Blueberry Pie.
So we've got it's got a very large girth. I don't know whether Betty had a big ass, but this certainly has a big ass.
I'm not Simon John Campbell.
Well, anyway, so back to the show
yes.
and back to Jimi Hendrix
and the sound of 1967. So this episode, it really concludes all the music that we've researched and felt were great songs and really gives you a flavour of the time
yeah.
Of that wonderful era. And with Chaz Chandler, who was focusing more on managing acts at the time after the Animals, there was there's this song. You know, when you hear stories about people falling in love with songs.
Mm.
Well, there was a folk singer called Tim Rose, and he was performing Hey Joe at this Cafe Wah, which is WHA with a question mark.
Okay.
Wah? Mm. Wah! In New York City.
Wah, wah.
Wah, wah.
Okay.
And Chaz was looking for somebody to record a rock version of the song, and it just so happened that Jimi Hendrix was actually playing in Cafe Wah, and he did a version of Hey Joe, influenced by Tim Rose's song. So that's how they met, and so that's when Chaz got Jimmy to come to London, and he wanted him to record that song so that he could get him a record contract. And when he got to London, he recruited a guitarist, Noel Redding, who ended up playing bass.
That's right, yeah.
And I was listening to the bass really good, actually. And drummer Mitch Mitchell. So they were his backing, and they were short of cash, so they used to rehearse at Jimmy's flat. And they had visa problems, and he had on the day they started recording, I think it was the last day, his visa was about to expire. So Chaz was at the immigration office getting 3 months extension, and then he rushed back to Delaying Lee. And the reason they chose that is because they had some hits, isn't it? Like The Animals, or House of the Rising Sun was recorded there. And so Jimmy, right, they had a big argument and it was over nothing but everything really to Jimmy. He was playing through a Marshall twin stack and it was so loud in the studio. Everything was rattling because it was like really, really loud. And so Chaz wouldn't let him play as loud as he wanted to. And Jimmy fell out with him and said, if I can't play as loud as I want, I might as well go back to New York.
Imagine me and you, I do. I think about you day and night. It's only right to think about the girl you love and hold her tight. So happy together. If I should call you up, invest a dime, and you say you belong to me, ease my mind. Imagine how the world could be so very fine. So happy together. Toss the dice, it had to be. The only one for me is you, and you for me. So happy together. I can't see me loving nobody but you for all my life. When you're with me, baby, the skies will be blue for all my life. Me and you, and you and me. No matter how they toss twice. It had to be. The only one for me is you, and you for me. So happy together. The dice, it had to be. The only one for me is you, and you for me. So happy together, so happy together. And how is the weather? So happy together, we're happy together. So happy.
The Toytles, Happy Together, the title track from their third studio album released in March 1967 on White Whale Records, released as a single in February 1967. The song knocked the Beatles' Penny Lane off the number one spot in the US Billboard Hot 100, where it stayed for 3 weeks. It also reached number two in Canada and number 12 in the UK. One of my favourite songs from 1967. I love those big vocals. And you know the thing is about this song, and it's a big feature of these 60s things, is that they move either from a minor set of chords in the verse to a major to make it sound
sad to happy.
Happy, that's right. And, you know, and da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, originally, I think it was written in E minor originally. You know, and then it bursts into life in these, in the chorus, and it just sounds great, great backing vocals, great production, and they had something to do with the Monkees, these guys, didn't they? I'm not talking about the Monkees you would find in the forest, where they should be, incidentally, as opposed to in a zoo, but the Monkees that released records.
Well, yeah, indeed, because there's a chap called Chip Douglas who was the bass player in the Turtles. He replaced Chuck Ports in October 66, and he did the arrangements for this song. And Mike Nesmith from the Monkees was really impressed by his arrangements. So after a gig at the Whiskey A Go Go, he went up to Chip and said, "How do you fancy producing the Monkees' next albums?" Because they wanted to break out of their sort of manufactured studio mold. So of course Chip went, "Yep." And he left the Turtles and he produced three Monkees albums, Headquarters, Pisces, Aquarius, Capricorn and Jones Limited, both in 67, or all of them, and co-produced The Birds, The Bees and The Monkees.
Blimey.
I know, that's a lovely story though, isn't it? Because also people don't just do one thing, do they? I mean, he's a bass player who had fantastic arrangements. He's actually a really good producer, great producer.
Well, yeah, it just sounds ace, doesn't it, this song? But, you know, I mean, the fact that they both joined, this is Howard Kalin and Mark Voltman, they both joined the Mother's Invention,
exactly.
Frank Zappa's Mother's Invention, right afterwards. Now, we know Zappa was a monstrous technical monster from hell. I mean, he just ate musicians alive. If you weren't really totally on the mark, he'd just eat you up and chew you and spit you out, you know, one side.
Yeah.
You know, so the fact that they joined them must, you know, mean that they were really, really great.
They changed their names as well to Flo and Eddie because of a record contract where they couldn't use their own names or the Turtles or something. So that's Flo and Eddie is basically the old Turtles guys. But, you know, you're talking about the song. This song was rejected by so many bands. Now, it's the power of the song. By the time the Turtles got this song in front of them, it'd been rejected so many times that the acetate was worn out.
Well, that is saying something.
Goodbye, I say hello. Hello, hello.
The Beatles, Hello Goodbye, and that was released as a single on the 24th of November in 1967 on Parlophone in the UK and Capitol Records in the USA. The B-side was I Am the Walrus. Within a day of its release, the record had sold over 300,000 copies in the UK and was number one for 7 weeks and gave the band their fourth Christmas number one single in 5 years. And it was also number one for 3 weeks on the American Billboard charts and in New Zealand, Canada and Australia, mate.
Written by McCartney.
Yep.
You can tell because, as John Lennon said, it was all a bit poppy for him, you know.
Yep.
Because on the other side, the flip side was I Am the Walrus, of course, which is a magnificent song. And people have said that if I Am the Walrus had been the A-side, it would probably have encouraged Lennon to lead the Beatles to new heights, where his decision to choose Hello Goodbye was one more nail in the Beatles' coffin. Well, I say bullshit. Absolute, utter bullshit. This is a great song. I Am a Walrus is a great song. The Beatles were falling apart for different reasons. It was nothing really to do with the direction. This yin and yang of Lennon and McCartney was fantastic. It peppers the whole of their work with
with
light, yes, and shade.
Yes,
you know, between darkness, which a lot of John Lennon stuff was quite dark, wasn't it? You know,
it was.
And then the, you know, Penny Lane, you know, which was knocked off the top spot by the Turtles earlier on, of course. But you know, it's incredible. These musicians were fantastic, and I can never get over the sound. Every time I listen to a Beatles record, I think, well, first thing I think about Jeff Emerick and the Marvelous Engineering, and Ken Scott in this particular case as well. You know, George Martin for doing all the orchestral arrangements, and the thickness of the drums. This sound, if I was mixing this, I'd never mix them as thick as that. But, you know, on the next record, I don't know. I think I might start mixing them as thick as that because it has a lot of weight to it. And the vocals are sort of sat in there thin. It's a beautiful mix, you know.
Mm.
And the bass.
He's got hippo bass.
Yeah.
Boom, boom,
but it is.
Boom. Boom. I could hear that. And did you hear that little cheeky bling, 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 bling? It was like, ooh.
I certainly did. And very busy as well.
Yeah.
And the thing about, you know, a lot of the bass players at this time, and you have also started doing it now, is a lot of them were putting foam under the strings, like James Jameson.
Yeah.
Because James Jameson did it a lot. He put foam right under the strings at the bridge to give it a very dull, thuddy sound.
Because when you pull the string, yeah, because when I have different basses now and I start to learn about them, because they're all different characters, it takes me time to sort of get to know them. With the Fender as well, you put a bit of foam there and you pluck the string, the note is more deadened, so it's like doof.
Yeah.
As opposed to doof.
Yeah.
So it has that more of that impact. It's more percussive.
Well, that's right. And if, you know, you are a good bass player, which you are a fantastic bass player because you've got the groove, and if it's the groove in the right place with that percussive sound like Jameson or Paul McCartney, for example, and yes, I am putting you in that same, I'm speaking your name in those same words with those same people, and, you know, but it adds to the whole percussive and groove nature of the song. There's no doubt about it.
Oh, don't it pain to
Tremolo's Silence is Golden, released in June 1967 on CBS Records in the UK and Epic Records in the USA and Canada. It went to number one for 3 weeks in the UK singles charts, number one in Ireland, Norway, New Zealand, and number 11 in the US, selling over a million copies. One of my favourite singles of the 60s, actually, the whole 60s. Those backing vocals, when they come in, are gorgeous. They swim in beauty and richness and harmony, and just they have tremendous sound. And it's a great song. Great song. Written by Bob Gaudio. Now, that is not a made-up name. He really is called Bob Gaudio. Keyboard player and backing vocalist with the Four Seasons and Bob Crewe, who also produced it.
Now then, there's a story about this song as well, because the Four Seasons actually recorded that and released that as the B-side to their number one single, Ragdoll, in 1964. Oh. And they used the same arrangement. So basically, it sounds very, very similar.
Well, yeah, it might do, and I need to listen to the Four Seasons version, mm-hmm. but I don't think they would have that vocal sound. And, you know, I've got to say that the engineering, the production on it, in terms of the actual sound quality, is not great, but, you know, the vocals and the song
make up
for it. We're
suckers for vocals and harmonies, aren't we? I mean, it is. It's like, you know, we've had this song playing on and off now for a few weeks, a few months actually, and every time we put it on, it's like, oh, I love this song. It's really cool. And Brian Paul and the Tremolos, they were actually called Brian Paul and the Tremolos before, you know.
Yeah.
And it was kind of influenced by, you know, you've got bands called Buddy Holly and the Crickets. So you had Brian Paul and the
and
Tremolos.
The Tremolos, right. Yeah.
So it's got one of these things. Now, there's a story which, you know, one of those stories that you hear and you go, oh no, whoever did that, I bet they're really kicking themselves. Decca Records were looking to sign a new beat group. Yeah, in 1962. Ooh. So on New Year's Day, they auditioned two promising young bands, Brian Paul and the Tremolos, and another combo, also heavily influenced by Buddy Holly from Liverpool, called the Beatles.
Ah.
And Decca chose Brian Paul and the Tremolos over the Beatles just because they were in London and they felt that they were closer to the audience.
You're everywhere and nowhere, baby. That's where you're at. Going down a bumpy hillside in your hippie hat. Flying across the country and getting fat. Say everything is groovy. When
it's obvious.
Mr. Jeff Beck and Hi Ho Silver Lining, his debut solo single released on the 10th of March 1967 on Columbia Records. It was written by American songwriter Scott English and Larry Weiss.
I thought he'd written it, you know.
Really?
Of course, he would never have written that.
But I know.
Thinking about it.
I'm smiling.
And he hated every minute of it. But Jeff Beck, you know, I love him. Because he's such a curmudgeonly bloke in terms of his... Apparently, a friend of ours, Davey Knowles, a great guitar player, he lives in the United States now, out of Chicago. Hello, Davey. And he actually toured with him. And he said he was very, very offhand and very quiet and just very, just not particularly nice. But what he did everything his own way. He didn't want to do this. Mickey Most actually forced him into doing it, who produced this record.
Yeah,
it was
true.
In Dealer Lane Studios again. Jeff Beck wanted Rod Stewart, the up-and-coming vocalist, to sing it, but Most insisted that he sing it, which, he's not a singer. Even the guitar solo in that, the doubled guitar solo, is a bit of a mess. It's not up to his standard you'd expect because both sides are like slightly out of time and stuff and it with each other. But, you know, it did do something. And I remember being at university, not as though I was there an awful lot, because I was out playing rock and roll.
Did you see him on Top of the Pops singing this, like laughing away?
Of course.
I remember.
Yeah, of course. Well, but at every disco... around
of
that
course.
Time, they were. It was the end of the night. It was always on, and everybody was there throwing beer around, and it was crazy because it's actually a really good fun song. And you know, if there's one thing about 1967, and we've said this over the past 10 shows, that the variety of material and the quality has been outstanding. And this was, you know, the beginning of Jeff Beck's. As a solo artist, which is incredible. He went on to do such incredible things, you know, masterful performances, brilliance in every respect. His guitar playing, his techniques come on, and, you know, I mean, he's an outstanding player. The guitarist.
That's true, but the only reason he did it, you know, is because Mickey Moe said to him, look, if you do this, he didn't know it gets a number one, but a hit single. He said, then you can do what you want for the rest. You know, but he just needed him to do that.
Yeah.
So that's the only reason why he did it, because he wanted the liberty to go off and do his own thing. And he refers to it, right, because he hated every minute of it, like you said. In the New Statesman, he had an interview with Kate Mossman, and he likened Hi Ho Silver Lining to having a pink toilet seat hung around your neck for the rest of your life.
Well, you know, Jeff Beck as well. As well as a lot of artists that we really admire, he really despises the advent of digital recording per se. Digital is great in a lot of respects, if it's treated with respect. And if you don't treat it as a crutch for your ability, and this is the last show of this particular series, and he said the computer is like a Zimmer frame. You play one note and it can make a whole album out of it. It's convenient, but it's not real. It's graphics. Where is the music? And I think that is what Susie Starlight and Simon Campbell and the Starlight Campbell Band are all about, because we want to capture the music. We do use digital. We use Pro Tools. We record onto Pro Tools because it's convenient. It's a lot cheaper than tape. It doesn't really sound that much different than a great tape machine, tell you the truth, if you've got a big analog console.
We're independent musicians, though, so we just haven't got the finances to record to tape, even if we wanted to.
Well, that's right. And also, it's a pain. Frankly, it's a pain in the ass if you're actually doing stuff with it. Because I remember cutting it, the 2-inch tape with a razor blade, you know, editing. Because people used to edit in those days. So, you know, when we edit in Pro Tools now, you know, it's just exactly the same as we used to. It's just a bit more accurate, a bit more convenient. I mean, when you listen to All Right Now by Free and the single edit, it's shocking because it's slightly out of time. If you listen to it, the single edit, it's a horrible mistake. Mistake in it, and whoever cut the tape, that's it, it's cut. You know, there's not a lot you can do about it after that. But you know, I do think, and this is our final show, and perhaps we can be a little more self-indulgent in terms of this. You know, today we are sat here in our studio in Germany. We have a 56 frame, 48 channel Karat console here. It's getting very warm in here now because it's on, and I'm going to have to take my shirt off in a minute. It really is building up the temperature.
It's lovely. It's like the heartbeat of that of, you know, the studio.
And one of the first things that we noticed when we did this show, we said to each other, don't the vocals sound that little bit better going directly through a big console? The Rolling Stones, of course, Let's Spend the Night Together, released as a double A-sided single together with Ruby Tuesday, another fantastic song, on the 13th of January 1967 on the Decca Records label in the UK and London Records in the US, went to number 3 in the UK singles chart. Also released as the opening track on the Between the Buttons album, their first British and 7th American studio album.
Yeah. Apparently there were sexually charged lyrics.
Well,
let's
yeah.
spend the night together in 1967.
Well, I mean, the Beatles really got, you know, really got in lumber with some of the songs, didn't they? And you know, this was really very, very...
Can you imagine that, though? It's like really surreal to think that you know, like Ed Sullivan, the stories of them going on the Ed Sullivan show, and again him telling them that they can't sing, let's spend the night together. They had to sing, let's spend some time together. It was either they go, that goes, or they go, and they don't go on the blinking show. Oh.
Well, the Doors of Jim Morrison, of course. He actually did sing the line, didn't he? He did actually sing the lines and never to appear on that show again. But which I think says something really about, you know, Jim Morrison and Mick Jagger, because Mick Jagger was thinking perhaps more about the commercial success of his band rather than his artistic freedom. And Jim Morrison didn't give a flying monkey.
Ah, that's quite interesting. But Glyn Johns recounts, you know, when they were mixing Let's Spend the Night Together, that Spooner Oldham, isn't it, was trying to get a certain sound by clicking his fingers, yeah? So they were clicking away. And suddenly into the studio, these two policemen turned up and they said, is everything okay? The front door's open. And he goes, oh, yeah, mate, everything's okay. And he carried on, like, clicking away. And he went, hang on a minute. And I think Dan the Kansas was like, actually, we need something a little bit more wooden sound. The finger clicking wasn't going on the track right. So they borrowed the policeman's truncheons to have a more clave-like sound. So apparently in 1 minute 40, that quiet bit, that's the two coppers' truncheons being used as percussive instruments.
Well, you can hear. I've always wondered about that. I thought they were sort of descended like bits of wood, but obviously they are bits of wood, yeah.
Well, usually they're smoking something illegal, but at this point they were just having the door open and they were trying to do some finger clicks on a track and they ended up borrowing their truncheons.
Well, that's amazing, isn't it? And, you know, it was written again by Jagger and Richards, two of the great songwriting teams of that era. You know, it was different than the Beatles, and I, you know, I do think that they wrote some fantastic songs in their early years, the Stones, and they sort of went off, and I just wonder whether the Beatles would have done the same if they'd have continued.
Change, change, change. Change, change. Okay.
Kick-Ass, Aretha Franklin, and Chain of Fools, released as a single in November 1967 on Atlantic Records. It was also released on her 12th album, Lady Soul. It was number one for 4 whole weeks on the US R&B charts and number 2 on the Billboard Hot 100. And it won the Grammy Award for Best Female R&B Vocal Performance and later a Grammy Hall of Fame Award.
The opening guitar line on that, now it's either Jimmy Johnson or Joe South, who were in the Muscle Shoals rhythm section, who did this. Well, it sounds like he's fallen off his chair, actually, at the beginning, because it's a bit of a mess. Now, bearing in mind, this is Chain of Fools by Aretha Franklin, but I'm sorry, guys, it's a bit of a mess. But anyway, it's not been edited. It is left as it was, right? And Jerry Wexler,
it's a hit, yep, put it out.
Produced this, he said, you know, let it go, I'm pretty sure. And the vocal, though, is absolutely fantastic in it. It is, like, monstrously good, with big hairy ears like a Labrador hummock. Like,
I know. I think I might have been a bit scared if I'd have met Aretha, actually. Yeah. And unless, you know, I think once you're in, and you're, you know, she'll give you a big hug and you'd be like, you know, it's the best side to be on. But, I mean, she's so powerful. I mean, her legacy spanned like half a century. And they say, like, she demolished the popular charts. So she turned up with these anthemic, powerful vocals.
Yeah.
And they say, you know, she was the first female inductee into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1987. And I'm thinking, well, you know, what about all the years before that? There were plenty anyway, so that annoys me. But
it annoys me too.
It's like, anyway, move along. But the thing is, Aretha Franklin, we love her. She's amazing. And subtly, what she didn't realise as well is that when this song, because this song was actually originally written for Otis Redding.
Right, okay.
By Don Covey, because Jerry said, write me some songs
of course,
for Otis. Then he heard it, and he said, nah, it's going to be Aretha. And but at the time, and this is the thing, you know, you talk about it's the song, and it's also the timing as well as the artist, because it was released during the height of the Vietnam War.
Mm.
So Chain of Fools took on a different meaning, especially after the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. in 68. So African-American veterans returning home from Vietnam, they kind of, well, they related to the song as like an angry rejection of the chain of command.
Information is a bittersweet fix. We used to wrap it in fish and chips. Instead of kicking the Liberty Bell, it hangs around like a bad old spell. Say what you want. Say what you want. You can say we
Starlight Campbell Band and Say What You Want from their debut album, Blueberry Pie, released in 2017. Who are these guys? It's us!
Yes! Ah!
Well, even though it's 1967, we thought we'd stick this one in. It's our own material, of course, from the last album. We're about to record a new one, which is going to be called Language of Curiosity. And that is one of the reasons why we are suspending operations in terms of the Supertown show at the moment, because it does take quite a lot of time and costs quite a lot of money to do. And, you know, we really want to focus on our new music. But I'm very proud of that. And, you know, I know that we recorded it, you know, and we produced it and engineered it ourselves. And Steve Gibbs is on there, Geordie Rossi, who's one of the great jazz drummers in the world, he heard it when we were in the studio, when we were recording, and he said, that is one fat-ass shuffle. And there's one thing about Gibson, he knows certainly how to shuffle. And on harmonica there, Danny Boy Sanchez, great thing. But I just sort of put it in there, and when I listened to it compared with the other songs from 1967, I think, you know, and I'm being a bit sort of, not boastful, but I'm just appreciating, I think, what we did, in the fact that I think that it does fit with that era. It does fit with that sound. We've captured the sound of that time, I think. It's a slightly dirty. It's not digital clean.
It's the heartbeat, I think, the soul of the feel of the music. And I think that's the way that I think we always will be, is we just want authentic. We love songs, and I mean, later on we'll be doing different styles, and but we'll still have an analog desk, and we'll still treat it in the beautiful way. It's an honest way, I think, of not sanitizing a song. It's keeping the soul of the music there, right there for you to enjoy. Because really, the music's about us connecting with you, and when we get out live, that's the best thing. And why we record as well is so that you can take us home with you. Yeah. And we can share the songs with you, because we can't get out to tour everybody in the whole world, but we'll get out as much as we can. But it's a way of just getting you to come in and hang out in the room with us, and that's the way, and that's why we record, really, isn't it?
Well, it is, and also our lyrics. I mean, that it's Say What You Want. It's a protest song. That's exactly what it is. It's a protest about political correctness. You know, I mean, I'm very vocal on social media, so are you. And, you know, we do get into hot water sometimes with our thoughts and opinions, because we are different. We are anarchistic in our views in a lot of ways. And I think it does upset people. But actually, I don't care. It's exactly.
I mean, really, what do you think? I don't know what people think musicians' jobs are, but as songwriters and people who actually play and express their instrumentation, for us, we're documenting what it's like to be alive right now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's what we're doing. And we're just using recording techniques from the late 60s, early 70s, because we believe that's the best way to record. But our songs are about now. We're just as relevant as any time.
Well, anyway, you've been listening to the Supertone Show.
Can it's I just
been
say as well?
104 shows we've done up to now.
104.
Yeah, it's been a mighty task, you know. And I think hopefully we have touched people, and some people, a lot of the people at radio stations that we're on, that we're obviously coming off now, are replaying the shows because they like them so much. So they're going right
start
back
from
to
the beginning.
One right the way through. So, but you're probably going
thank
to be
you
able
so
to hear
much
us
for that, you know,
for 100 odd weeks. To,
it's so touching.
To come. Well, it is very touching, yeah. And we're a bit tearful about it, really, because we enjoy doing it, but we must focus on the music right now.
And I was going to say as well, if please do keep in contact with us. We have a website. It's starlight-campbell.com. So Starlight is Starlite. Campbell.
Yeah, CAMPBELL.
.com. Go and have a look at our website, and we've got a newsletter, so you can sign up, and we'll send you emails. I think it's about once every 2 months, so it's not we don't spam you or anything like that. Just tells you what we're up to and shares our journey with you and how Betty's coming along with recording the new album. That's our new console, you know. And it'd be great to keep in contact with you. And then we'll tell you when we're coming down to your city or your town. So, you know, hopefully you come and get to meet us in person.
And just to play out the final track, which I think is very appropriate, from The Doors. And the final one from 1967, the final one from the Supertone Show for the time being, The End.
This is the end, beautiful friend. This is the end, my only friend. The end of our elaborate plans. The end of everything that stands. The end. No safety or surprise, the end. I'll never look into your eyes again. Can you picture what will be so limitless and free? Of some stranger's hand in a desperate land. Lost in a romance, wilderness of pain, and all.